Let's start with education. You've been visiting schools across the states recently, looking at how opportunity funding is being used on the ground to tackle a variety of issues, from assisting low-income and English language learners, mental health supports, behavioral health, pre-K registration. From your perspective, are they having the impact you'd hope they'd have, this funding?
Well, let's first talk about and think about what the objective is. And mm-hmm. we have really three simple objectives. And one of the things I wanted to do and told the people of Delaware I would do if elected governor was to really kind of focus our energies in public education. And we have three big objectives. One is to make sure that every child can read at grade level by grade three, because you learn to read from preschool to grade three, and then you read to learn the rest of your academic career. So if you're not reading at grade level by third grade, you're going to struggle along the way. And we actually have a long way to go with respect to that. And then secondly, and particularly since math is increasingly important in the world we live in, science, and the jobs of the future are going to be based so much in math and science, is to have that middle school math proficiency as well as an objective. And so we've got math coaches and a focus on that. And what's interesting to me is I ask the children all the time, what's their favorite subject? And so many kids today will say math, which I think is not the way it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes me feel good. And then lastly, our third big objective is to make sure every student graduates from high school either ready to go into the workforce productively, and we have a pathways program that has grown. It's something that Governor Markell started. It's really been quite effective and quite necessary, or graduate ready to go into higher education at Delaware State University, University of Delaware, Delaware Tech, Wesley College, or wherever they might go. And they're ready to go, mm-hmm. and they're proficient to go, and they don't need remedial
right.
classes. We hear a lot about that from each of our higher ed. So if you think about those as the overall objectives, and then you ask yourself, how are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
You find out we're doing okay with some student populations, but not nearly as well with particularly children that come from disadvantaged backgrounds and English learners. And so I've put a focus on additional funding for the schools, the principals and teachers, to really lean into making sure that those children have an equal educational opportunity in our state and are able to be successful. And that's where opportunity funding comes into it. So it's a big priority for me and for us as a state. I've been very pleased with what I'm seeing. Every district, every school, every principal has a little bit different approach to it, and it meets the needs, I think, of those student populations. And but we'll have to see. I mean, one of the things that was important with the whole effort was to create a committee to evaluate the programs and make sure that they're actually having some impact.
Is that, I guess, the big question going forward then? Is this opportunity funding going to go far enough in terms of not just the amount, but also in terms of the permanence of what it produces? I guess, in short, is this just maybe the start of what needs to be done to deliver long-term education funding solution for schools across the state?
Well, it's certainly the start of new resources to achieve that objective, for sure. We don't have that to date, although principals and superintendents can use their local money and state, you know, their state resources. We're not an underfunded education system in Delaware. We rank pretty highly among states in terms of the per student funding for those for education. But we do not target resources specifically other than federal Title I monies for our disadvantaged students. So it is the start in that respect. Teachers and principals have been working on it over the years, but this is a start of adding additional resources specifically for those populations. I think the key is to really focus on what works.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the evaluation subcommittee is so important, to look at what's working across our state.
I do want to ask, I mean, there is a possibility that the future of funding education in the state is something that could be imposed upon the state by the courts. There's two lawsuits right now revolving around funding inequity and then property tax assessments at the county level and how they impact funding. How much do those looming cases factor in your administration's thinking about what's next for funding beyond opportunity funding in Delaware?
Yeah, it doesn't factor into my thinking at all, frankly. You know, I thought about what we needed. I've been thinking about what we need to do in public education for the last 20 years after being elected lieutenant governor in the year 2000. And we did. We really focused in those days. That was just when the accountability standards were having a real impact. And we decided to take a look at the schools that were successful, and we created a program that we called Models of Excellence in Education. So it was really looking at just what we're talking about, different programs and districts and schools that seem to have it working, and in particular looking at the proficiency achievement levels for low-income students, minority students, because we know and we hear all the time about the achievement gap or the opportunity gap, as I like to call it, which is where the opportunity funding language comes from. And so for me, that was always the focus. We have, as I said, so when I ran for office, I talked a lot about simplifying things. Let's not change the test again. Let's not change the standards again. Let's really hunker down and figure out how do we get every student where they needed to be, third grade reading, middle school math, and high school graduation. And so we're really leaning into that. With respect to the case itself, you know, the court will make its decision on the issues that are before the court. As I said, we, if you look at the spending, and we have to look per student now by virtue of the new federal legislation, you'll see that we significant amount of resources goes to the students that we're talking about. So we'll see how the judge looks at that.
Is there a sense, though, that there may be a need for further deeper conversation, not just over the issues we've talked about before, but also, you know, we've talked about growing enrollment at schools and growing special needs enrollment, which also puts some pressure on the education funding system as well, right?
Absolutely. And it's something that very few people really know about. And I learned just becoming governor 2 years ago, we had 208 new units. That means we had however many students make up a unit, 15 students per unit or something like that. But 200 of those units were special ed units, to your point, which means the student population in special ed units is growing much faster than the rate of regular education students. And so what happens is you get more resources for those special education students. Then the more complex their needs, the more revenue you get. If it's an autistic child or a child with severe learning challenges. And so as a state, so back to your question about resources, you know, we struggle to keep up with just new students coming in, and particularly students, high need students, to meet their obligations. This year, in a budget that we just presented to the General Assembly, the number associated with just the new students projected for last year was $40 million.
Right.
That's a pretty big number.
Yeah.
So when you add that into what we're doing, we're talking about significant resources just to keep up with the student population. And a lot of that, as you say accurately, is because of larger percentages of students with special needs.
You mentioned earlier the local funding piece of it. And I'm curious, I mean, there have been some other ideas floated in the legislature about that piece of it, specifically surrounding the referendum process. And it seems in recent years, almost every district that goes to referendum fails at least once before it ultimately maybe succeeds. And there has been discussion about allowing districts to raise taxes a small amount without referendum on the operating side. Is something like this something that should be more seriously considered to kind of help in this kind of puzzle that you're putting together for funding to take some pressure off the districts and having them to put a lot of resources and energy into basically having the campaign to get the money they need?
Yeah, as you well know, Tom, it's been an issue that's been talked about for years and years and years, as long as almost as I've been in public service, and there's just not a lot of support out there for doing away with referendum, not surprisingly, not much support for taking away from people the ability to vote on whatever the public policy issue might be. That's kind of the way a democracy works. So going back to our focus, which is on opportunity funding, our objective will be to, in some ways, replace what would otherwise be covered by local property taxes with state funding. And that's the approach that we're taking, as opposed to trying to figure out a different way to do referenda for local operating budgets. And I would observe, as you probably know, that capital referendum are much more successful because
right.
it's something that people can look
it's
at.
It's tangible.
And,
right.
It's tangible. And it shows you're physically the commitment. And we have brand new school. We have brand new high school. Dover and Bridgeville and
Indian River just got there.
Indian River, another one. And frankly, the two high schools they had were pretty new. And you know, when you think about it, but it's much more difficult on the operating side. And so our focus on opportunity funding and meeting the needs of students with special needs, I do think we have to look at in the long term. And this is something that I wanted to combine internally at anyway. With opportunity funding and the evaluation of it after the three initial years, is Division III, which is equalization funding, which, as you know, goes towards the poorer school district property tax value wide. So, districts like Lake Forest and Woodbridge and Laurel and districts like that. Now, everybody gets money out of Division III,
right.
and that's a big. It's almost $100 million.
Right.
You compare it to the $20-25 million of opportunity funding gives you. An idea of the scale.
Right.
And I think that's an area that we can take a look at because it doesn't – there is a component in there that relates to local effort in terms of the property tax rate. I think everybody currently meets that effort, but you get more state resources as a result of that, and that can be a mechanism to address the issue you've been talking about.
I bring up the referendum in part because Christina School District has now set a date for its next referendum in June. It has struggled mightily to pass their referendum in recent years, and for now is home to Wilmington Schools, which you have sought to help in this particular budget that you presented with capital funding for one new school and renovating two other buildings. Is there a worry that that capital spending plan isn't as effective if the district running those schools is in a funding crunch because they can't pass a referendum?
Oh, absolutely. And the reason that my proposal is for the state to pay the full amount for those school renovations and upgrades is because there's some uncertainty about what district those
schools will be. The Reading Consortium is working
for
that now.
The Reading Consortium and the work that they're doing. Important work for sure. And by the way, under Governor Markell, with the commission that was set up there, the so-called WIA commission, recommended that those schools no longer be part of the Christina School District, that they go over to Red Clay. It wasn't ultimately approved, but the point is that there's a big question mark around where those schools should go. Should Christina, which is not adjacent to the city of Wilmington, should they still be part of that mix? And Reading Commission is going to look at those important questions. From my perspective, there are children in those schools every day, and we need to make sure that they're getting the best education that they can. And that's why we developed the Memorandum of Understanding to assist the district, since we don't, at the state level, have the kind of actual authority or control there in meeting those student needs. And it has to start with buildings that are up to date. The buildings are in terrible condition.
Mm-hmm.
We can discuss or argue whose responsibility that is, but we have a responsibility to make sure that children get what they deserve, and then Reading will determine
where it
all falls out in the end. And you won't be able to say, as was said before, by Red Clay, well, we don't want those buildings
because we're going to have to fix them.
We're going to have to fix them, and that's a fair argument.
One final question on education. We saw a Christina board member censured recently for comments suggesting the best thing for some children growing up in high poverty areas would be to remove them from their families as infants and return them when they've graduated high school. At the same time, Odyssey Charter under fire for a board member commenting jokingly, suggesting it build a wall between itself and the dual language charter school neighbor it has and actually rents the space to. How much, in your opinion, do situations like these involving school leadership hinder efforts to improve schools in this state, especially in places like Wilmington? And is there any role the state can play in making this conversation a better conversation?
Yeah, I think it does hurt our efforts to address the real needs of these students and the populations. And I think what was said in both cases are, you know, we're unfortunate and insensitive, particularly to the children and the families that were alluded to in both sets of comments. And yes, the state can, and state leaders like myself can make a difference. You know, from day one, I have said that the children in the city of Wilmington and poor children across our state, in Dover and Seaford and Laurel and Milton and Milford, no matter where it is, are just as important. And they're not, you know, and they're not achieving the levels that we need them to be successful in life. And so we need to do a better job there. So yes, there is a moral voice that comes along with the authority of these offices that we hold as a privilege to serve the people of our state, and we should provide the leadership. Sometimes with the frustration of the moment, the frustration of not being able to figure out how to help children. I don't question most people's motives. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know the people as well involved with the Odyssey situation. We have worked with Mr. Pulaski on the Christina School Board. I know that he cares about the children. It was unfortunate what he said. But we need to be more thoughtful about how we're stereotyping children and families, and more thoughtful about saying we have a public obligation to help make sure those children are successful. We're going to be a better state for it. Every individual is going to be better for it. It's in all of our interest, if you need to look at it that way. We have an obligation to those students, and we have an obligation as elected officials to be leaders and to express, you know, kind of a moral authority there.